Hello, everybody, and welcome to the GMS Magazine podcast. I am Paco Garcia.
And I'm Sean Harris, also known as RVC Bard.
Hello, Sean Harris, also known as RVC Bard. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I don't have my caffeine in me, so if I'm more subdued than usual, that's why.
Okay. Well, that's, I'm sure that is a facet of you that people will be really keen to finding out anyway, because it's like having, you know, different personalities. So it's fine. I know what I'm like when I have caffeine in me, and my friends say that I speak twice as fast.
Yeah. So I might go to my normal slow Southern drawl. So.
But the thing is, okay, considering the topic that we're going to be talking about today, that may not be a bad thing, because I get the feeling to explain a number of things very slowly for some people. Otherwise, they're not going to get them.
Oh, dear.
Now, this is a confrontational way of starting a podcast. Welcome to my life. Today, we're going to be talking about representation, but not necessarily just around the table, but in media, because at the time of recording the podcast, and this has been recorded on November 11th, 2020, there has been some controversy going on, and I'm going to say warranted, even though some people are saying not. I'll explain very quickly what it is, to make sure that everybody's on the same page on this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris Spivey from Darker Hues game, the Harlem Unbound author, is coming up with the all Western equivalent or extension to Harlem Unbound. It's quite an interesting thing, because I have to say the Western era, time and space, I'm not particularly keen on, because it wasn't age of genocide, colonization, and incredible fuckery. That, even though I am not American and I wasn't, you know, anywhere near that place all that time, but it just feels like too many things were going too wrong at that time for it to be something that is glamorized way too often. But we're talking about Chris Spivey. This is somebody who knows what they're talking about and who's written some absolutely fantastic material. So what does he do? He writes a short story that he's going to run on a Twitch channel. And in order to run that thing, he has invited a number of people. It's a very diverse cast of people, and one of them is going to be Matt Mercer.
Right.
Who is by far the least diverse person in that team.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's important that we keep in mind that I believe he is one of the, I think probably the only white folk. So Chris designs these NPCs, and the NPC that's being allocated to Matt is actually a person of color.
Right. So these are randomly assigned or just...
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I cannot say for sure, but I think that, you know, the characters that Chris designed were diverse.
Okay.
You know, he put some photographs and they were diverse. And I may be wrong, but I believe that the character that was assigned to Matt Mercer was Chinese.
Okay.
So, because this game is going to cover the whole, you know,
right,
old rush Chinese immigration experience kind of thing. So Matt was very gracious about the whole thing, I have to say. I read some his tweets, and he was very, you know, I think... this is a very sensitive topic for an awful lot of people. I don't think my experience is going to be well suited for the representation that this character deserves, and therefore, I don't think it would be a good idea for me to play this character. I've spoken to Chris about it, done. I'm out. Which kudos to the guy. You know, I have been very critical of Critical Role in the past. I will be very critical of Critical Role in the future because I think they have an immense responsibility over their shoulders, whether they like it or not. But overall, I think it's a great show. I think they do great work. And I really applaud what they're doing for the RPG and the D&D community. So no issues with Critical Role whatsoever. No issues with Matt Mercer whatsoever. But that has sparked the conversation around because, you know, Chris came up to defend his decision based on anybody should be able to play anybody else around the table. You know, and the role-playing game should be a good space for us to share our experiences and put ourselves in the shoes of somebody else so we can understand their experience a little bit better. And that's a bit, ooh, I can see what you're trying and wanting to do there, buddy. And I can also see how that could be problematic. So that's the whole situation. So hearing that, what's your first impression, instinct, feeling?
This is where I kind of, again, this is like one of those moments where it's like, it's both and. Like, yes, there's a lot of potential for this to go very wrong. You know, we've seen what happens when we let white folks portray people of color, you know, like, you know, that's that way lies blackface and like the Fu Manchu type of thing. And it's like, you know, that is certainly not something I would want at my table. At the same time, however, we are always saying that we want more diverse stories. We want more diverse characters. We want, you know, we're tired of cishet white dudes dominating everything. Yet here is a chance to do something other than a cishet white dude. And you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. It's like, and then if you look at the hobby as a whole, not just the specific game, where it's like, is it like a historical game or yes. Like, okay. So we're not talking about like a Weird West situation where they're like gunslinging zombies or anything.
Oh, no. It is Weird West. I think there is a kind of Cthulhu-esque horror aspect to the whole thing. There is supernatural activity for sure.
Oh, okay. All right, so that makes it even more the case then. So it's like, you know how we're always saying, it's like, okay, when someone wants to play a person of color in a setting that's imagined to be exclusively white, they say it's like, okay, well, there's dragons and wizards and elves, but a black person is a bridge too far. Then, you know, you have someone who bringing in that diversity that we say we want, and then it's like, well, you can't do that because you don't, because you're not this type of, you're not the, how do I say this? You don't bring the right sensibility to the bowl, I would say. And I can get where that comes from. I mean, look, everybody's comfort varies. But at the same time, I'm like, well, you kind of have to make a decision here about what matters most. And then, of course, you have to be very clear about boundaries. Like, I don't watch Critical Role. It's like, I think I tried to watch D&D games like that, but it just didn't. The whole format just doesn't do much for me. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, do we want these diverse characters and these more diverse stories or not? And if the answer is yes, then we have to say, okay, now, under what? Now, when we say yes, now does this mean that, okay, well, we have to face the reality that the hobby is still dominated by straight white men? So if you don't want straight white men to play anything but straight white men, then we're kind of creating a paradox as far as saying we want more diversity. And then at the same time, it's like I mentioned earlier, I don't want stereotypical nonsense at the gaming table. So it's one of those things you have to negotiate on a case-by-case basis. I really do think that. It's just, I mean, I know we talked about this before, where it's like, I'm sorry, you cannot apply hard and fast rules to all these things. It just doesn't work. there are too many variables. There's too much, you know, and it's just, and then when you talk about like a historical based campaign, especially when you consider in the Wild West, so to speak, most of the cowboys were Black and Latino. Yeah, the John Wayne thing, that's Hollywood. Most of the people doing that very dangerous, low-paid work were Black and brown. So, you know, I guess it, you know, it's just, and it's something that I've often talked about. It's like, you know, we have to stop this thing where we try to have these rigid boxes or these rigid rules to replace the thinking and the negotiation we have to do at our own gaming tables. Mm. You know, it's like, it's a nuanced thing, and you have to approach it with nuance. It's just how it is. So, you know, what works at your table, like the boundaries you're not willing to cross, is something that might be different at my table. Like a, I'll give you a good example. It's actually a comedic example. Like a Tropic Thunder sort of situation. I don't know if you remember when that movie, people were pissed off because of Robert Downey Jr. doing blackface in it.
Yep.
Okay, but the thing was that the film itself was mocking the type of actor who would do that.
Yes.
it's a really meta joke. It's a meta joke. And it this is like, and I, now me personally, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to sit here and stand for Robert Downey Jr. or anything. It's just like, I got where it was coming from. So I wasn't pissed off about it when I saw the film. I was like, oh, one of those actors. And thoroughly enjoyed it. But for other people, that's a little, you know, they understand the joke is just not funny to them. Mm-hmm. So I can't argue them to thinking it's funny, but at the same time, it's like you have to allow for a variety of viewpoints and experiences and perspectives. There's no one monolithic thing, and that's another thing. And another thing I was thinking of was because I wrote some thoughts down because this thing got me thinking. The thing about in other situations, when you're looking at media, when especially in film and television, when you have, say, a white actor take on a role that was meant for, like, a character of color, like when you have a ScarJo situation or an Emma Stone situation or a situation where, like, the character is clearly meant to be a person of color, but then a white person plays them, well, the whitewashing or you have a white person doing blackface or yellowface or redface in order to portray these characters. One of the very real consequences of that is that it takes opportunities away from marginalized artists.
Exactly.
But at a role playing, at a gaming table, is that really the case? Are you taking, it's like, is this character, is this white player portraying a non-white character taking an opportunity away from a non-white player? And my guess is probably not. I don't know how that whole process works, but I mean, unless you have like some sort of weird audition type thing you do for your gaming table, but I don't think that that very real consequence is not usually a thing to worry about at a game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I think.
It's a pretty complex thing because I'm with you about the representation, you know. So I'm trying to approach this with as much nuance as I possibly can. And my first impression was Matt Mercer did the right thing. You know, now, do I believe that? Because I don't think he would be able to portray a good Chinese character. No, you know, Matt is a very experienced actor, and I believe he could have studied enough the culture, the character to got into it well enough to be able to make a fair job out of it. Or at least I want to believe that he would be able to do that. The fact is that we are not going to know, but I want to believe that he would be able to do that. But the thing is, considering that if we start thinking about how many Chinese or Vietnamese or, you know, Asian designers and actors and actresses we know, especially in the role-playing game arena, because I can only name two. Literally, I can only name Seng Feng Lim and Banana Chan. I know there are more, but I cannot name them. I've seen some faces, but I just don't have their names in my head. Whereas I could tell you names of plenty others who are white people. So I think that that lack of representation is what makes this a tricky issue, because regardless of whether the person could portray a person of color accurately and respectfully or not, the fact is that we don't see enough people of color doing this already. So I believe that giving an Asian person that role would have been the best possible decision to make.
Right.
You know, so that would help. But on the other hand, I am with you on the, if we limit who can do what where, then what does that say about diversity? And my take on that is just do it. Just go ahead and do it. And the only thing that you have to be prepared to do is to deal with the consequences if you fuck it up.
Right.
But right. You have to do it, because the only way we're going to learn about this is understanding what's been done wrong, take it from there, evolve and do better.
Right.
Whether people are prepared to go through that process, which can be really harrowing, is a different matter altogether. And I can understand Matt saying, I won't do this so I don't have to go through the problems if I fail.
Right. Yeah, and that's valid too. And this is sucks because it plays out online, plays out on social media, where nuance is dead.
Correct.
So you get people, and then it's like people say, and then of course what makes it much more difficult too is that you'll hear contradictory things from the very people who want more representation. So you'll hear like if this is like, or in this specific case, we're talking about an Asian or Chinese character. You'll hear something from, you know, this person over here who's, you know, Asian, this person over here who's actually Chinese. You hear this from Chinese Americans. You hear something else from Chinese nationals. You hear something else for other Asian people. You hear something else, you know, and then there's like people of color in general. And it's, you know, there's so many, like I said, it's like there's so many ways to view and tackle this situation. But you have to pick one. You have to make a choice. Even refusing to make a choice is making a choice.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's no getting around it. There's no getting around it if you're serious about the representation. And, you know, and I don't envy the person who's kind of in the crosshairs of this, but at the same time, it's like, well, you know, that's what it is. You know, people on the internet are probably going to yell at you. There. And it's not necessarily because you're a horrible person or anything. It's just the medium brings out the worst in people. And then, you know, and it's like, and people want these monolithic, you know, things that sort of bypass the thinking, that bypass the process. And it's like, I'm sorry, it just doesn't work that way. You know, you have to fail. You're going to have to fall on your face and get back up and try better and do better. It's like riding a bike. You're going to fall down, you're going to keep falling down, but then you're going to get your balance. And then, you know, then you'll understand it. It's, you know, then it's, I don't want to say smooth sailing because you can always get hit by a car, but, you know, you get the hang of it. you get the hang of it. Either you get the hang of actually playing the character, or you just get the hang of the, you know, the consequences. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to be mad. Oh, is that the end of the world? Okay. Go about the business.
And, well, the thing, though, is that for some people like Matt Mercer, it could be the end of the world because their career could be at stake. You know, if he portrayed this this Chinese person incorrectly, mm-hmm. or in a way that enough people saw as disrespectful, or to be perfectly honest, simply if people just decided that it's not the right thing to do, mm-hmm. for somebody like Matt Mercer, that could have enough of an impact on his career to actually end it. And okay. with his, the career of some people around him. So I can understand that that has to be taken into consideration even as a business decision, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's true. But for those of us whose career does not hinge on such a thing...
Oh, well, no, that's different.
That's different. Yeah, and then it also got me thinking about, like, okay, well, that's in a setting where there are actually white people. What about a setting where there are no white people? Like, I was thinking of Avatar: The Last Airbender. What if we did a game based on that, you know, set in that world where there are literally no white people? None. Everybody's Asian. There's East Asian, there's South Asian, and there are indigenous people. There are Inuit. But, well, Inuit, and I put that in quotes because it, they're influenced by the Inuit, but not, you know, it's not a one-for-one comparison. Okay. And I'm thinking, well, what about that situation where there's no grizzled white dude avatar to gravitate to. So, what, you know, there's no grizzled white dude, like a first-person shooter, you know how, like, he's always, like, this buff white dude, mm-hmm. like, and there's none of that to latch on to in the setting. And I'm like, so what happens if like there's a setting where there are literally no white people? Do you just not play that setting, or do you? You know, the approach with caution. Well, I guess approach with caution is usually the best way to go about it. But I mean. And then there's the fact that, like, Avatar: The Last Airbender was, the showrunners were two white dudes. And they had a lot of consultants, they had a lot of input, and they did a lot of research. But it's still, like, at the end of the day, these weren't Asian people creating an Asian fantasy setting. These were white dudes creating an Asian fantasy setting. So there's that question too, where it's like, okay, well, you can say, yeah, it's probably best if you don't portray a character of a different race or ethnicity than you, if you really don't feel like you could do it justice. But at the same time, what happens when that's not an option? When the option is you have to play this thing that's different from you. So, yeah, what about that?
Well, I mean. To be perfectly honest, I think in that case, you just go for it. But I also believe that around your table, you go for it. And to be honest, I believe that even on Twitch channels, maybe not right now, but again, not because I don't feel that people shouldn't be able to do it if they wish to do so, but because I feel that it's more important to promote diversity and representation in media, in visual media especially, over characterization. Mm-hmm. So, but I feel that yes, that should be doable. But it should be doable. Matt Mercer portrays this Chinese person. It should be done. Mm. It really should be done. Again, the nuance that we always speak about. Not in this particular case, because I want to see more Chinese people. I want to see more Asian people. You know, in front of the camera playing role playing games. I think that is a very, very important thing to do. But if that problem wasn't there, if that lack of representation wasn't there, then yes, I would love to have seen what Matt Mercer does with the character. you know, because why not? Because as you say, you know, if he messes up, then he messes up and the next one will be better. And that's it, you know, and we'll find out if he's a good enough actor or he isn't a good enough actor. You know, goodness knows that Hollywood has forgiven an awful lot of misdeeds to an awful lot of actors. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean Connery did the most Scottish sounding Russian submarine captain in the history of Hollywood.
Talking about is The Hunt for Red October.
Absolutely. And, you know, and nobody, you know, jumped up his throat for how dare you not doing a Russian accent. How dare you portraying, you know, a Russian captain like any other character you've ever done.
Yeah, but first of all, they're speaking English on a Russian submarine. That's kind of, if you're suspending your disbelief enough for that, you can. But yeah, it's like, and that does too, like, kind of segues into another thought I was having. It's like, are we, you know, it's like, yes, we want more diversity, but are we, if we, I don't want to say if we're asking too much. That's, are we making it, are we putting up too many barriers to getting to where we want to go? Like, if we want more diversity, but we say, okay, if you don't fit, like with the Sean Connery example, okay, Sean Connery was Scottish, portraying a Russian submarine captain. And, you know, and the ethnic divisions between Eastern and Western Europe, I have not studied that in depth, but I know it's a real thing.
Mm.
So, you know, it's very real, and it's like, and I think a lot of Americans in the audience like don't necessarily grasp that. It's like, well, they're all white. It's a whole other kettle of fish with that.
Yes.
But and I feel like, okay, so, and I'm not saying do we, as people of color, demand too much. I'm not saying that at all. Don't put words in my mouth. But it is like, has to be a space for figuring things out without having to, like, risk so much. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like a safe space to figure things out. There has to be something like that, because you don't learn without screwing up sometimes. It's like any skill, any, you know, kind of absorbing new information. It's like nobody gets a perfect score the first time they try something. It's like, it's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, oh, well, we should be nicer to the people who make a joke, who make a, you know, a grotesque stereotype out of, you know, people of color. I'm not saying that.
No.
You know, there's a difference between someone who's trying their best but doesn't quite have the right experience or the right information, and somebody who's deliberately being an asshole. You know there's a difference.
Absolutely.
Okay, you know there's a difference between somebody who's, say, portraying a Chinese character as like a human being,
mm-hmm,
versus one who's portraying a Chinese character as like a gross stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a marked difference where, you know, somebody's making a person's ethnicity just a facet of their humanity versus one who's treating it like a joke. And you know, and my threshold, I guess, is a bit higher than a lot of people. But then again, it's not always, but then again, if you're portraying a black lesbian, and then it's sort of like, maybe my threshold's not so high after all, but like...
Exactly.
it's not me, you know? So it's like, kind of touchy about the Jewish stuff.
but that's the thing, and I think we need to recognize, and that's why I think it's important to, before doing any of these things, and this is for the listeners and viewers out there who, you know, are thinking about this, it's a matter of having a conversation as to the reasons, and a conversation not just with the people around the table, but with yourself as to truly, why do you want to do it? Okay, I could play a game with you and say, you know, Jean, I would love to play, you know, this Call of Cthulhu game. I would love to play a rabbi because I'd love to learn a little bit about this and from this. So I would need your input from it. It would be completely different than if I came to you and said, oh, I watched this this film and I just want to play this rabbi in this because I think this character is just hilarious. And play the mean, tight arse, you know, pedantic over the top rabbi stereotype.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a massive, massive difference. And I bet your response would be pretty different if I approach you with one concept or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we need to have that conversation, but I think it's important that we have the conversation with ourselves as to, you know, why would I want to do this? I mean, what is it that I'm going to learn from this that would warrant or require that I put you, my friend, through the possibility of doing something that you're going to find very upsetting?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? And I know that it sounds like a very complicated and convoluted way of looking at how to make a role-playing game character who is meant to be something just for fun, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But it matters because that could ruin your game and our friendship.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, and I say this because it's like, and I say all this because it's like, look, I'm not going to dredge up the ghost of role-playing games past here, but like, this stuff I'm talking about, I'm not talking about it as like an abstract thing. It's not an abstract thing for me. It's like, yeah, when I look at my history of like different kinds of characters, I'm like, sometimes I go, yikes. Some stuff I thought was a good idea. But you know, I learn better, so I do better. You know, but the thing was, I had a space where I could do that. You know, I had a space where I could have my shitty concepts or whatever, and you know, have that. But then again, it's like I was the only person of color at the table, so I couldn't really offend anybody but me. So unless I played somebody white and unsavory in some way, then I got in trouble. But you know, so I'm not saying this to you, dear listeners, as if like I got this perfect right out the bat from the moment I started role playing. It was like, no, I say this as somebody who probably would struggle with it too.
Mm.
And, you know, who also wants to play people different from myself. It's like, yeah, I'm on a Black Jewish lesbian kick because I don't see that often. But I'm also playing other kinds of people. And I want to be able to play other kinds of people, but not in a shitty way.
I think you put the finger on it, though, when you said about whether we are putting too many barriers to the portrayal and representation of diversity. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to start having more conversations rather than accusations about it. And we should become better. And I'm saying this, as in general, we, to throw it out there for listeners, you know, that if this applies to you, great. If it doesn't apply to you, then don't take it personally. This has nothing to do with you. And if you feel that it applies to you, well, maybe it does, but we should start learning to identify when things are done out of ignorance, out of incompetence, mm-hmm. and out of malice. Mm-hmm. Because if somebody makes a mistake out of ignorance, I'm very forgiving about that. You know, you didn't know better. Here is my soft but firm kind of reply to what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
If you've done it out of incompetence, I will probably step up the conversation into, you're not good enough to do this, don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't have the talent to do this, so,
mm-hmm.
or the knowledge or whatever, just stop. You know? And if it's done out of malice, then I'm going to go full-blown storm on them, just, you know, shitting every single ounce of crap I can out of my mouth,
mm-hmm.
because there is no room for malice.
Right. Yeah, I don't game with people like that. That's the thing. It's like, I don't surround myself with people who do that on purpose. You know, especially after you say this thing you're doing is hurtful.
Correct.
It's like, you know, it's like, I don't buy my geek social fallacies. You know, it's like, I don't have to game with anybody I don't feel comfortable around.
Mm.
And you shouldn't either. You know, not you personally, not you, Paco, but I mean you.
No, anybody. Nobody should.
Nobody should to do that. It's like, you know, it's like when I see people, it's like, well, you know, you see it all the time with, like, on Reddit threads and stuff where they're like, oh, well, I have this player who keeps, you know, making inappropriate comments to the female players. Give that fucker the boot.
Yes.
You know, life's too short to play a game with assholes. And I'm assuming, and they're giving you a huge benefit of doubt here, I'm assuming that you're not trying to be an asshole. And so if you're not trying to be an asshole and you get it wrong, you know, and I kind of nudge you and say, hey, this thing's not cool. I'm not saying calling you an asshole. Trust me. I'm not nice to assholes. I'm not aggressive at all. I don't believe in that shit.
No.
If you're going to be an asshole, I'm not going to game with you. So, you know, excuse me. It's just, you know, so just, you know, also, like, take criticism in stride. I would say that's something that could do. It's like, take criticism in stride. And also when you're offering criticism, like you said, it's like, tailor your criticism to the nature of the infraction. Be a little savvy here. Like, somebody, if you just happen, and sometimes this happens, for instance, where you're gaming with a person with a lot less life experience than you, or a lot less role-playing experience than you. You know, I know I'm going to get set on fire for this, but sometimes you just got to cut people some slack.
Yep.
You can't go full blast on every little thing, because number one, it doesn't work, and number two, you're just going to exhaust yourself. It just makes you miserable. It makes them, and if the person's not an asshole, it makes them miserable. It's just sometimes a gentle, you know, you don't need to shove when a nudge will do. And I get it, because, you know, like, a lot of us in this hobby are not necessarily good at social cues. But, you know, just sometimes, sometimes you can be gentle sometimes. It does work sometimes. I believe me, it does. I usually try to be tactful and gentle the first time. But then when a person comes back at me, like, spewing vitriol, that's when, you know,
gloves off.
Yeah, I just go, you know what, screw you, and block and move on or whatever. but that's not my first response. That's usually not my first response. Anybody who's actually interacted with me or seen me interact with people would know that. Like, whether it's in the group that we're in, it's like, you know, somebody says something a little off color. I say, yeah, you might not. I'll give you an example. It's like somebody used the R word when they were criticizing something else, like something else. And I say, hey, I get what you're saying, but, you know, that word is not, you know, kind of don't want to use language like that around here, mm-hmm. or whatever. Then that person just unloaded on both barrels talking about censorship. And it's just like, you know what, you're an asshole. So yeah. And that was it. That's like, okay, enough with you. We might be on the same side, hint, hint, but we don't value the same things. So yeah, and I don't really mean to say, well, you just let bullshit slide. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, you have to be a bit more strategic about some of this stuff. Because you can't go full blast on every little thing, because you just, it's not good for you. It really isn't. And it's, and this is probably a topic for another episode or whatever, but like how you can kind of get addicted to going off on people.
Mm-hmm.
There's an addictive quality to it. And me personally, as a person who has life experience being verbally abused, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be verbally abusive to people. And I don't want people to be verbally abusive to me, regardless of what I do. So I pay a lot of attention to, like, how I respond to things, because I have to. But going back to, like, the actual discussion, like I was talking about, like, what do you do when there's no white people in the Senate? And or when, like, your exact identity don't line up the way it's quote-unquote supposed to. And I was thinking, like, well, what about Black Panther? Because that's the other example that came up with. Because Wakanda is technically in East Africa. Well, it, like, according to the fictional universe it exists in. In its existence, East Africa. Somewhere near Uganda somewhere. Was it Uganda or Sudan? Or Kenya? I don't recall, but it was in East Africa. And film, T'Challa was played by an African-American man. Mm-hmm. Nakia was played by Lupita Nyong'o, who is, yes, African, but technically Mexican. Mm-hmm. You have Letitia Wright, who plays Shuri. I think she's British. And you have Ross, played by Martin Freeman, who's also British. Mm-hmm. You have Clow, who I don't know. Ulysses Clow, I don't know what his nationality is. South African. But he's portrayed by Andy Serkis, who is, I think, Kiwi. Either Kiwi or Australian.
Yeah.
So, are we supposed to say that this film does something wrong by not having all the Wakandans be portrayed by Native Africans? And all the white people, like, the white American played by a white American dude, and the South African guy played by a South African dude. But this is what I mean when I say, like, are we erecting too many barriers here? It's like, well, yeah, they're Black, but they're not African.
Hmm.
And that's a whole diaspora versus continental conversation that's in-house that we're constantly hashing out on Twitter. Like, there's a whole cesspool of arguments to go on with that. And I'm not going to touch it. But, like, at what point do the so-called requirements that you are so-called allowed to play these characters, like, when do they become obstacles for the sake of obstacles? Mm. Or obstacles for the sake of, you know, that really fearful protectiveness thing? Well, sort of like, for instance, the example you gave me, you approached me about a Jewish rabbi, it's like, well, am I all of a sudden going to say, well, it has to be an Orthodox Jewish rabbi? Or it has to be, you know, or you have to be Hasidic or nothing. Like, well, you know, because the first thing I probably ask is, like, well, rabbi, like, what kind of rabbi? Like, you told me a Sephardic rabbi. I'm like, I can't help you there because I'm not in touch with any Sephardic rabbis, but I do know how you can get in touch with some. It's like, and then it's sort of like, oh, well, so it's interesting. Because it's like, and the irony, of course, is you're probably more equipped to play a Sephardic rabbi than I am, because you're actually from the Iberian Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and I know that this seems like a tangent, listener, but it isn't. The real history that you would be drawing from to portray this character, and you're probably more familiar with it than I am. And you're probably more familiar with the cultural nuances of being a person from the Iberian Peninsula than I am. Like, I don't want to assume you're not Jewish, but I'm guessing you're not Jewish. Mm-hmm. And yes, being Jewish adds something, but it's like, it's not like this isolated thing that doesn't interact with anything else. Identity is complicated and fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's no such thing as an identity that just all by itself, you know, in the middle of nowhere, not touching or rubbing against anything else. It's like that
That doesn't exist.
That's not how culture or people work. It just, you know, and the more you learn, it's sort of like, wait a minute. And it's this thing we always find out, you know, it's like people want to say, for example, like all of a sudden, all of these different genders and sexualities coming from, like, no, they've been there the whole time. We've just now starting to, because, you know, they can't murder us or throw us in prison or have us lobotomized, that, you know, for being who we are. Now we're reaching out to each other, we're finding each other, and we're having conversations among ourselves and naming ourselves. So all these things that we, these experiences of like gender and sexuality, they've always been here. It's just now we have a vocabulary for it, at least in English.
Mm.
But, and it's the same thing with like when it comes to history. It's like, you can't just say, well, can I play a trans character? Well, it depends. I mean, there's more to a character than that. Like, okay, this is going to sound real messed up, but I'm going to say it. I was very good friends with a trans woman in New York whose family was were Afro-Latinos from Honduras. Now, if I were a player who was Afro-Latino with a family from Honduras and also a native Spanish speaker, but not trans, versus a white WASP trans woman, which one of us to so-called quote unquote claim such a character or claim such a person?
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, where are the cutoff points? Where's the point where it's like, oh, well, you can't play this character because XYZ. Like, who am I to tell a trans woman she can't play a trans woman because the racial and ethnic background is different from hers? Or who is a person to tell me I can't play an Afro-Latina character? Not me personally, but like, if I were Afro-Latina, who in their right mind would tell me I could not play an Afro-Latina character just because her gender is different from mine?
Hmm.
So it's, you know, that's why I kind of like roll my eyes when people try to make these artifacts rules, because it's like, nobody is just one thing. Nobody.
Hmm.
And how you connect to a character, you know, okay, you might connect to it in one way, you might connect to it in another way, you might connect to it in a whole bunch of different ways, except for the one that you think sticks out, but it only sticks out because you've normalized other things. So like, if, for instance, with this Afro-Latina character who's trans, it's like, yeah, the trans might stick out for you because you've normalized cisness as normal. But then you have all these other identities that they kind of just, they're just as important as her transness. You get what I mean?
Mm.
So it's like, how are we ranking the identities here? Are we ranking the identities? Are we like deciding which of these identities are more important at any given time? And what's the basis for that? And I'm not going to tell anybody what they need to do, but it's like, when you come at these situations with these really simplistic, reductive, quote unquote, rules, you have to be mindful of other things that you're not really taking into account.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I think you make a very, very good point about ranks, you know, as to who is allowed to do what and when. And most importantly, who is going to decide that? Mm-hmm. Because it's a very tricky thing to do, you know, because this is a very personal thing. You know, I have had friends who wanted to play gay characters, and I have been incredibly uncomfortable about it. Mm-hmm. Because I knew the kind of gay characters that they were going to portray, and it was like, oh my God, you're just, stop, just do not continue doing this. And I've had other friends who wanted to play gay characters, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful because, you know, the experience, their approach, their real intent at the time of playing the characters was completely different. So who am I to say to somebody, don't do it? Mm-hmm. And who am I to say, oh, no, no, you can portray a gay man, but you cannot portray a gay drag queen man, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a bit, why should I? And the problem is that an awful lot of people do erect themselves as, you know, judge, jury, and executioner in these sort of situations, which is what I have a massive, massive problem with. Because the issue with that is that you're stopping people from learning to do it better. Mm-hmm. I remember when The Strange, I don't know if we've spoken about this before, but I remember when The Strange came out, you know, from Monte Cook Games, and one of the recursions, I think they're called, mm-hmm. within the game is a recursion with Native American people. Mm-hmm. And it is very stereotypical. I mean, it is a bit cringy to read it. And I have to say, because I know Bruce Cordell and I know the kind of man he is, I cannot see any malice or any incompetence in it. I just can see that there wasn't done enough research about it. I can see some ignorance. But there was somebody who demanded in the most stern and, you know, vehement way that they recalled all the books, they took out that part in the book, and never, ever, ever again. And I thought, oh, get fucking lost.
Yeah.
Jesus, I understand you're getting pissed off because your culture is being stereotyped in a game, but do you really want to take away the chance of these people actually realizing that they've made a mistake and do better the next time? Do you really want to stop them from hiring you as a consultant to find out how to do it better? It's ridiculous. That kind of reaction is just utterly moronic. I'm sorry, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I could almost see such a strong response if, like, what they were doing was truly desecrating a sacred thing.
Well, yes, that would be different.
Yeah. That would be different. Like, now, if you, like, printed your game... Now, when I say truly desecrated a sacred thing, I don't mean, oh, you borrow elements from my history and culture that you use them in ways that I found distasteful. I don't mean that.
No.
I mean, you literally printed your game on a Torah scroll. What is wrong with you?
Wow. Oh, my God.
Why? It's like, yeah, but I like the smell of parchment. It's not a good enough excuse. Or, like, and there are some things that are, like, that some people consider minor that I kind of, like, bristle at. But nothing, very rarely does anything I encounter warrant such an extreme response. You know, unless it's like you said, like it's deliberate. Like, what is that game? There are two games that, like, I refuse to play. There are two games that I flat out refuse to play just on principle. The first one is Fatal.
Oh, well, yes.
Oof. And the second one is Rahoa.
I don't know that one.
Huh?
I don't know that one.
Okay, Rahoa is like an acronym for racial holy war. No thanks. Keep your Nazi propaganda, like, in you know, on a floppy disk where I know nobody will look at it. Just, it's, you know, stuff like that's flagrant hate mongering. Nah, nah. That stuff, yeah, don't print that out. Take it off the shelves, never print that mess again. But, like, I mean, considering how many gaffes and goofs that big companies, like, and I mean, like, and there's another thing, too, like, somebody brought it up when it comes to, like, creations, like, independent or smaller publishing or small media, like how, what you call them? Noelle Stevenson gets a lot more criticism mm-hmm. for, like, things she does wrong with She-Ra than, say, Disney would get for the things they do wrong in their film, even though Disney has a much broader reach. and their messages are much more likely to reach more impressionable people.
Yep.
And it's like, so you're going to put all your criticism into something that few but insiders would actually be privy to when you're talking to, say, Noel Stevenson. And I'm not talking about, like, that weird stuff, the so or whoever, Bo's brother. I'm not talking about the off-color jokes and all that. I wasn't there for that. But just, like, any missteps in the media she creates. You know, it's funny how people have all this energy for smaller companies and that are, like, taking steps in the right direction versus the behemoths that don't really care until you affect their bottom line. And that's another thing I have to say, too, but it's, like, it's not just proportionality, but it's also, like, why are you directing all this ire toward this solo project that might reach a few dozen people when there's media out there perpetuating much more harmful messages with a much broader reach?
Yep.
Like, I mean, yeah, I care in the abstract what a solo project is doing, but I'm invested in what, like, Wizards of the Coast is doing.
Mm.
I'm invested in what, you know, let's say White Wolf or Onyx Path Publishing is doing. I'm invested in, you know, what, you know, Pathfinder is doing.
Yeah.
But Paizo, you know, Greenbrunner and Paizo and all those people. It's like, I'm invested in that because those games have a lot bigger reach. And those games, for so many people, define what role-playing is. So if I see something in those texts, you know, texts by those companies, I'm going to, like, pay a lot more attention. And on top of that, they have the resources to do better about this. They can hire those consultants.
Yep.
They can hire those sensitivity readers. They can have, you know, an extra round of proofreading or editing and, like, somebody pointing out things. So, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, it's like, again, it's like, you got to be strategic about these things.
I think one very important thing that we need to learn to do as well is learn who we have to work against.
Mm-hmm.
Or what we have to work against, and who and what we have to work with.
Right.
Because there are places, there are games, there are companies that we can work with them to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
And there are products, there are companies, there are people that we cannot do that. We simply have to work against to get rid of what they're doing.
Right.
You know, and I think learning that differentiation and understanding that the response needed for one or the other, even if we don't like that company, even if we don't like those people, mm-hmm. you know, some people are hell-bent against Wizards of the Coast because of the mistake they've done in the past. Whereas I think, you know, Wizards of the Coast is a company to work with,
mm-hmm.
not against.
Right.
You know, take what they do. I know you don't like it. I get it. I hate some of the things that they've done and some of the things that they're doing. But they have shown a willingness to do better.
Right.
And objectively, if we look at the things that they used to do 10 years ago and the things that they're doing today, they are doing better. They're not doing perfect, but they're doing better.
Yeah.
So that deserves, I'm not going to say a second chance because I think that is a bit strong, but they deserve the, okay, guys, okay, let's sit down, let's talk, listen to what we're saying and do better next time. And if next time they fuck up, it's a smaller fuck up than the ones they used to have, that's a baby step. That's good. That's good news. It's not great. It's not perfect. It's not the end of it, but it's good. Let's work with that. Let's just take it in the chin that perfection cannot be achieved immediately. We want everything to be perfect now. That cannot happen. We just have to keep pushing gently towards that. And then there are some other companies that, I'm sorry, there is no stopping them. There is no changing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just no, I don't want to see them alive. I'm sorry.
Right. And it's like, Wizards of the Coast, like, especially with 5th edition, and I'm not going to get into the edition wars or anything, but it's like, has been, their trajectory has been to become more inclusive over time, not less. And it's like, no, they are not perfect by a long shot, but at least when I play a D&D game, nobody can tell me I don't belong at that table.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can tell me the kind of character I make doesn't belong at that table because they're the wrong color or the wrong gender or have the wrong sexuality. And that means a lot because for so long the narrative has been, well, you have to cater to straight white dudes because they're the ones who are buying the books. And if you make it too female or too colorful or too queer, they're not going to buy it anymore. And that proved to be nonsense. It's like, wow, we don't stop chasing Nazi dollars. You don't need to.
Mm.
And then they did better. They're doing better now than they did before, you know, when they were kind of, when they weren't so openly inclusive. And I know it's all about money. I know they don't really care. Blah, blah, blah. I know. Yeah, I know the cynical take on it. And you know, they may be right, but the fact of the matter is they're moving toward a more inclusive hobby, not less.
Correct.
So.
Correct. Okay, let's start wrapping it up because we've been at it for an hour. And if we leave ourselves to our own devices, we'll be here for another hour. I'm meant to be meeting people in half an hour for dinner. So let's very, 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 very quickly, one piece of advice that you would give somebody who would like to play a character from a different real world culture.
So much to think about. Okay, the usual thing people say is do your research. And I agree. But I'm gonna give you some piece of advice that other people aren't going to say. And I'll say this, remember that you are playing a human being.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You're not playing a label. You're not playing an aesthetic choice. You're playing a human being.
That is a very good way to finish it. I love that. Really, really love that. Good. Well, I hope not too many people have taken this badly.
or anything. I was very good.
I hope so. But also, I hope they don't mind if I don't give a shit if they've taken it badly. that's just me being, hey, whatever. And hopefully people will send us some comments as to what they feel regarding this topic. It would be great. To have different perspectives on this matter. And in order to do that, they can get in touch with me at podcast@gmsmagazine.com. That would be the email address. And they can get in touch with us going to their Facebook page as well, which is lovely. It has over 500 people in there who are absolutely wonderful, most of them. And they can get hold of me on Twitter at GMS Magazine, and you as well.
You're going to have to hunt me down.
because
my Twitter is so...
Well, that's a challenge.
My Twitter is not as calm as me. It's a lot of... It's not exactly a curated feed, I'll put it that way.
Well, that's not bad. They know what they can find, you know. They can deal with it. They're grown-ups, hopefully.
At RBC Bard on Twitter. I think it's unlocked. Or you can do my author Twitter at Sean, S-H-A-W-N-C Harris. And that's my professional Twitter that I barely post to. But there you go.
Okay, but until the next time. Oh, by the way, listeners, if you want us to talk about anything in particular, by all means, do let us know, and we will be delighted to consider your proposals for some absolutely outstanding pieces of role-playing journalism, which is, of course, what we do here. But until the next time, I am Paco Garcia.
And I'm Sean Harris.
I will talk to you very, very soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.